So I thought I would begin by telling you what Nathan did on his July 4th vacation. I had the really great pleasure of spending a few days with my sister and brother-in-law. My sister Bridget and her husband Tom flew to Sacramento and drove up through the north coastal route of California and the southern and central Oregon coast, and I met them on the central coast and spent Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with them, seeing parts of Oregon I had not yet ever seen and spending time with family. It was truly wonderful. And there were several highlights, but perhaps the greatest highlight was being in Yahutz for the La-Di-Da 4th of July parade. Has anyone ever had that rare privilege? Mary Lee, good. You'll have to tell me afterwards whether I have described it accurately. Well, has anyone here been to Yahutz? I had not. Okay, all right. So that's a small town. That's a small town on the Oregon coast. And it was a delight. So the La-Di-Da parade, basically anyone can be in. It's their 4th of July parade, and it was maybe about 200 people with maybe 300 or 400 people. So Yahutz was packed for the La-Di-Da parade on July 4th. And it began with the Precision Umbrella Drill Team, and it ranged from P-Flag Central Coast, woo! Yeah, I was very excited to see them. They didn't quite know what to do with me, like, screaming in the sides. Although the couple of rainbow bears just down the sidewalk from us probably knew what was going on. They were wearing tie-dye, and their beards were tie-dyed as well. So I'm suspicious they might have understood. There was also the librarian drill team. Yes, my favorite sign of the day, go forth and read. I took a picture of it for my mother, the librarian. There was rumor that the mayor might be riding a manure spreading machine. I'll give you a moment. Mayor manure spreading. Okay, yes. There you go, yeah. But that never materialized. I think they were just saying that to annoy the tourists. And it was truly, truly amazing and spectacular, and all kinds of silliness happened at the La-Di-Da parade. So it seems to me our July 4th celebrations throughout our country are these sort of opportunities to relax, maybe because it comes in the middle of summer. We let loose, we celebrate. It's an excuse to do those things, to get together. It also seems to be an excuse to see Uncle Sam saying, "I want you to buy this mattress," or to buy this particular brand of car at this dealership. So in a way, Independence Day is a kind of independence from some of the restrictions that we experience or our responsibilities. And I will add, it seems to be a freedom, a celebration of a freedom of from, shall we say, good taste. But it was a great time this weekend with my sister and brother-in-law who are traveling back to San Diego today. As enjoyable as our 4th of July celebrations in the United States can be, they do bring up mixed feelings. They bring up mixed feelings for me because I have mixed identities. I'm a gay man. I am the son of a World War II veteran. I am an American citizen, and I am a Christian. Those are all compelling mixed identities. And I recall an incident a number of years ago that illustrates what happens when those mixed identities collide. Years ago, during my clergy internship, which began only days, the weekend of the 9/11 attacks was the beginning of my clergy internship. The Sunday of Veterans Day, which followed soon thereafter, during that Sunday worship, the pastor invited all those in the congregation who were serving or who had served in the military to come forward for a prayer of blessing on that Veterans Day Sunday. Now, that MCC congregation was in a city that had considerable military presence and personnel. And on that Sunday, more than 20 people, more than 20 women and men, came forward publicly. Now, that was an important witness in that day, on that moment, to bless their commitment. Particularly, they were serving in dangerous circumstances, and remember, they were still serving under the demand that they don't ask or tell who they really were. So to bless them in a public setting, in an MCC congregation, in a military town, was a particularly rich witness. But then it took a turn that I found very disturbing. The veterans and military persons were then asked to lead the congregation in the U.S. Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I was the new clergy intern, and I was seated on the dais in front of the congregation with all the eyes now turned forward to say the Pledge of Allegiance, and I was struck with a very different feeling, knowing that I did not wish to participate in that particular moment. But I didn't want my non-participation to be utterly disruptive. So what's an intern to do? I am proud to be a U.S. American, even with our mixed moral heritage, much like the mixed heritage of Christianity, we might also add. But to ask a worshiping community to make a pledge of allegiance to any nation, when at least a few of whom are present in the congregation I knew were not U.S. citizens, just as I know in this room, not all persons here are U.S. citizens. Some found it inspiring, and it was deeply upsetting for me. We talked about it at the staff meeting. So, like all good internships, I learned a lot of really good things during that year. And many of the things I have embraced and tried to do, and there are a few things I learned that I would never do. And I learned that day that I will never have the Pledge of Allegiance spoken in worship of a church that I pastor, a Pledge of Allegiance to this nation or another nation. Because the marriage of religion and nationalism, while expedient, has proven toxic in history. Pick a century, pick a country, even pick a religion. There may be an exception, but I cannot think of one that there is an example of the wedding of religion and nationalism that has not proven disastrous. So, you may accuse the pastor of taking it all too seriously. I did go to the La-Di-Da parade on July 4th, by the way. Maybe national anthems and flag waving are as harmless as children giving a father a precious moment statue that says, the best father in the world, which is certainly an unverifiable claim, but a sincere expression of love. Or maybe it's nothing more than wearing your favorite team's colors and cheering them from the stands. Go Beavers! Go Ducks! Okay, notice that was a sports reference. They are few and far between, so savor it! Savor it when you get it. But what happens when those children start arguing and challenging each other, saying, my dad's gonna beat up your dad? Or when sporting events get named civil wars, when the athletes receive debilitating injuries, when people are hurt and crushed under crowds of rioting fans, is there a point at which joy and fun and even loyalty cross the line into danger? I love the text of the hymn that we sang this morning, This Is My Song. It is set to a very familiar tune by Jean Sibelius. It's Finlandia. It is a celebration of Sisu, which is the national and cultural spirit of Finland. And while we sing the tune of a nationalistic anthem, we sing aloud words that remind us that God cannot be the possession of any single peoples or any nation, but a God of all the nations. While our hearts can beat with sincere love for our own homeland, wherever it may be, we affirm that, quote, other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams that are as high as mine. Those words were written in 1934 by Lloyd Stone. And that date, 1934, you will notice is between world wars, after the First World War, before the Second. It was an expression of hope that there might be a lasting and holding peace among nations, races, and cultures. And we know that hope is not yet realized. But it's still a vision, dare we say, God's vision, that can make space for loving one's home and loving sisters and brothers of another home. So for me as a person of faith, the space is held and created not because of political correctness, and it's not even for me just about a deeper multicultural education and awareness. Watching BBC World News is a help. So is Al Jazeera America a help. As important as those have been, it's an awareness that even though my passport says I'm a citizen of the United States of America, with all of the attending freedoms and privileges that it grants, to steal a phrase from my ancient friend Paul, I have citizenship in another country. That other country is the kingdom and realm of God. The earliest confession, dare we say, creed of Christianity was a simple statement of affirmation, and that statement was, Jesus Christ is Lord. Now, we can rightly take issue with the word Lord in our day, in the 20th and 21st century. But we should not mistake or overlook why that phrase was so powerful in its original setting. In the early centuries of the Christian movement, during the Roman Empire, that ruling world power during the rise of Christianity, the quote, Pledge of Allegiance for the empire was simple, Caesar is Lord. That was the Pledge of Allegiance. So when an early Christian said publicly and aloud that, quote, Jesus Christ is Lord, it wasn't just a spiritual affirmation of a belief. It was a public pledge of allegiance to a different ruler. It was a declaration of independence from an empire, and that proved to be seditious political betrayal. It was to state that you actually lived under the rules and ruler and laws of another empire, of another lord. Your citizenship declared in another country, the one in which God was in charge. The Church of the Sojourners in San Francisco has initiated a different kind of celebration on July 4th. Rather than celebrating as a religious community, celebrating U.S. Independence Day, they declared July 4th, quote, celebration of Yahweh's kingship. Celebration of Yahweh's kingship. Again, perhaps those are words we might take personal issue with, but it's a principle that is still, I think, enormously helpful. One of their leaders, Debbie Gish, explains it that by choosing that day to celebrate God as the ultimate ruler, they are symbolically and concretely declaring what their allegiance is, to whom they are allied. She clarifies that for some people, it has been seen as a statement against the United States, but it is not. It is a statement for the kingdom of God. It's not against the United States. It is for the realm of God. So that's a really long introduction to a really short two-point sermon. Because I think citizenship in God's realm means two things: freedom and responsibility. Freedom and responsibility. Doesn't that sound a bit like citizenship anywhere? First, the freedom. The freedom is it lessens the grip of any other power upon our lives. Freedom from the grip and claim of any other power. The claim of any group, any tribe, any clan, or any nation will always be less than, will always be smaller than God's claim upon us. So the rationale that, well, that's just how we do it here, or that I was just following orders from someone higher up, that doesn't work when the ultimate orders are from God, and the orders are love your neighbor as yourself. Freedom and responsibility. While we may be free from the lesser claims of a tribe, nation, or state, we are never free from recognizing our interconnection with sisters and brothers, all children of God. The reading from Norman Cousins describes it so beautifully, using the image of being the cell in a body of billions. I am one among billions. My needs may be individual, but they are not unique. I am interlocked with others. I think it's one of the reasons why the recent disclosures of the thousands of children who have been detained while crossing the border and the conditions in which they are detained has evoked new concern and attention to our broken immigration in the United States. If we are citizens of a realm in which God is in charge, we are not free from being connected. We are not free from recognizing our responsibility for these children and the adults, for that matter, of any other nation. I began by describing one prayer blessing at one church. And I want to recall another blessing in another congregation I served. This blessing happened a couple of years later, and it was for two people who were going to Iraq. One was being deployed for military service, and the other was traveling to be a human shield for non-combatant Iraqi citizens, both in the same congregation. Came forward for blessing on a Sunday. Both of them U.S. citizens, both members of the same community of faith, worshiping together on Sunday morning. Now there is a paradox, an embodied paradox in community. Blessing them both because we knew and cared for them both was a challenge and a blessing for everyone, because somebody was annoyed by everything, and somebody was blessed by everything at the same time. Everyone in the room. It was an important witness of our interconnection. I often wonder what would have happened had they met under different circumstances in Iraq. How would that sister and brother have recognized one another? May our Independence Day not just be a celebration of fun, may it be that, but may it also not just be a celebration of how through heroic human effort oppressions are overthrown and freedoms are secured, but may it be a call to something greater for us. May it be a declaration of independence from any claim of ultimacy that any power can make upon us, any power that is less than God. May it be a declaration of freedom and interdependence, something that is only possible when your true citizenship is in the realm of God.